Until I get back.
All right, we're good to go, guys.
All right.
So if you're ready, we'll just kick it off.
Sure, leave it up to you.
All right. G'day, you're listening to the No Illusions podcast on the Podcast Network. My name's Cameron Riley. It's the 1st of September 2010. And on the show tonight, a mate of mine in Sydney and one of his mates, Rob James and Andrew Blander. Welcome to the show, boys.
Hey, Cam.
G'day, Cameron.
Now, I was in Sydney over the weekend and caught up with Rob for a cigar and a scotch, as we do. And he was telling me about this thing that he and a handful of mates and a couple of hundred of hanger-oners, I think that's the official terminology, are doing this coming weekend, the Father's Day weekend. And it sounded like a fabulous thing. So I wanted to get him on to talk about it in a little bit more detail. Rob, why don't you give us sort of the 60-second overview of what you're doing, and then we'll talk about it in some more detail.
Sure. So basically this Father's Day weekend on the Sunday morning, myself, Andrew, and another motorcycle rider, Raz Cherev, have organized a ride to go to Alice Springs, which is just over 3,000 kilometers away, that we're going to be doing over the full week. And the purpose of the ride, well, besides, you know, an excuse to get on our motorbikes and ride into the sunset, is to raise awareness for men's depression. So it's in alliance with the Black Dog Institute, and we're in fact going to be merging with another ride that is the Black Dog Ride to the Red Center, which is a guy called Steve Andrews that's riding out from Perth, and we're all sort of riding to the center of Australia, meeting in Port Augusta, and then heading north to Alice Springs. In fact, we're going just outside of Alice Springs, about 130 kilometers west of a place called Glen Helen Resort, which is basically the end of our ride, which is going to sort of culminate in a bit of a dinner and an event that's all about talking about, you know, the issue that we're writing about, which is men's depression and how, you know, basically it's not really talked about much at all these days, and usually swept under the rug. And, you know, we're trying to sort of bring it into the forefront of media and getting men to talk about the fact that it is a real problem. So, yeah, it's fantastic. We've got about 100-odd riders coming with us on the journey. So a lot of them are starting off with us on Sunday morning. So we've got a launch event from 7 a.m. till 10 a.m. at Deus Ex Machina in Camperdown in Sydney. So we're all leaving from there, about 100-odd, like I said. And we've got other riders joining us on the way and some dropping off, but the three of us are at least going all the way.
So let's talk about men's depression and why you picked this particular cause to try and raise awareness for.
Sure. I guess from my perspective, look, I've had friends and some close family that have, you know, suffered from depression, but, you know,
Hello? Oh, you still there, Andrew?
I certainly am. Continue on.
It tells me Rob's dropped out, so let me bring him back in. Technology. It's good when it works.
That's right. No, it's fantastic when it works. It's good when it's working. It's bad when it's not. There we go.
Oh, I'm back.
You're back. You were talking about you've had friends and family that suffer from depression.
Yeah, so you know, over my lifetime, I've had family and friends that have gone through the issues and that haven't been in the past been diagnosed as depression, but usually are associated with something else, such as drug addiction or some other addiction, alcoholism, substance abuse, etc. So I've always I've had some real personal issues with some family where it's really affected my life. So this whole ride originally started when myself, Andrew, and Raz got together about a year ago just to do a bit of a fun run, and we said, wouldn't it be great to actually do this with a cause, with a purpose behind it? So men's depression, well, depression and men's depression specifically was something that was close to the three of us. So we decided that was the one that we really wanted to go out for. But Andrew might have a bit of a different story around that. But that was
What's your experience been with depression, Andrew? Now's when you talk, Andrew. Oh, now he's dropped out. Jeez. What's going on, Skype?
And we were just talking about how good Skype was.
We were laughing about how flaky it was when you dropped out.
Right.
No, user not online now, it says.
Back again.
Yeah. So, Andrew, tell us what your experience has been with depression.
Oh, look, I've got a few friends, mostly on Twitter and some of my other social networks, who've got depression or had depression at some stage in the past. And I always think it's fascinating to hear from them, both the good and the bad that comes with that. The good usually after they've had the bad, but also some of the insights and such that they have when they're depressed and how they can say they feel creative and such. And one of the things that I like to associate with this as well is the fact that I come more from the proactive angle. I've got a little side project called My Proactive Life where I'm doing my best to try and become a better person and try and lead a good example for my two boys. And one of the things that that links all of us together is that between us, we actually have seven sons, and they're all roughly the same ages between, you know, between 8 and 5, coming down to 5 and a younger one. And I want it to be that by the time that they're older, that they're okay and they're comfortable in talking about depression, that there is no stigma attached to it. There is no feeling of vulnerability or weakness by coming out and saying, hey, guys, I don't feel well. I think I'm depressed. I'm lonely, or I'm not feeling great. I'm not happy all the time and things are not going right for me. So from that perspective, I think it's a generational thing where I just want to make sure that we lay the groundwork, so to speak, for the next generation to come through and have it easier, because at the moment it is difficult. You bring it up in a topic around, you know, the barbecue where you're speaking about sport or how your team's going on the weekend or how's little Jimmy or little Kate doing at school, and you'll get some of those sort of superfluous type discussions. But bring up, you know, something serious like depression and people all of a sudden, you know, think, oh no, it's a taboo subject, I'm not going to talk about it, I'll look at the clouds and do something else. So from that perspective, I want to try and leave a legacy that says that depression is a normal part of life. As long as you talk about it, don't internalize things and seek help when you think you need it.
Yeah, look, I think you're totally on the money. I was saying to Rob when we were having a smoke on the weekend that I remember 20 years ago when I first decided I had a problem with alcohol. I'd come from generations of alcoholics, and my dad had been in AA since I was a kid, so you know, I was well aware of the danger signs. When I was a young fellow, I was like 17, I moved to Melbourne from country Queensland and hit it pretty hard for the first year. And when I finally decided I probably had a bit of a problem with it, I joined AA and I stopped drinking. But I remember, this is like late 80s, whenever I told people back then that I was working with, etc., that they'd say, yeah, I have a beer on a Friday night, and I say, no, actually, I don't drink. Back then, that was like social suicide if you said you didn't have a drink. I had a lot of people say to me, I don't trust a man who won't have a beer with his mates on a Friday night. There was still a huge social stigma around addiction and alcoholism back then, whereas today, we sort of don't have that anymore. Somebody says to you now they don't drink, no big deal. Nobody bats an eyelid. We understand addiction a lot more today, and I think to some regard it's as a result of all of these celebrities going through rehab in the last 20 years. We kind of see it as a fairly normal part of life now, but it's not the same with depression yet, is it?
I don't believe so, no. And I guess the other angle that you could look at, just to build on your story there, is if you look at the iconic rock bands, the Aussie rock bands of the 80s, you know, the Angels, AC/DC, etc., there was a stigma of you're going to go out there, you're going to party hard, and with partying hard came the drinking and such. And from that perspective, I think they've now come out and said, you know what, drinking was great and it was wonderful, it was a thing we did back then, but now looking back in hindsight, it probably wasn't a good thing. So that, from that angle, yeah, it was exposed and it was out there. Whereas depression is not really something that's out there either back in the 80s or 90s or even now. And what we've got to do is slowly but surely bring it out into the light, make it something that we can talk about, make it less of a taboo subject. And I guess if you have a look at some of the other movements around men's health, such as the Movember movement around prostate cancer and such, mm-hmm. that's starting to take traction. But even then, that's been, you know, 4 or 5 years in the making. So we're starting to see the winds of change. We're starting to see the impacts of this. But you're right, with regards to things like the drugs and the alcohol, which are more visible and more people can see the visible aspects of that, you know, when you're hungover or you're shouting and screaming and withdrawing from the world, you generally don't get to see some of those external things that you do when someone is depressed. And that's the other hidden piece about it is something that's often seen as, oh, it's my problem, I've got to try and solve it, as opposed to the great work that AA has done with the alcoholics of the world in saying, do you know what, it's not your problem, it's everybody's. If we make depression into a problem that everyone can help to solve, I think that will go a long way towards removing that stigma.
And we saw it, just keeping the rock side of it up here, we saw it, I know I was in Melbourne at the time, when Paul Hester, the drummer for Crowded House, committed suicide tragically in the late 2000s, I think, 2005, 6, yep. 7, somewhere like that. And we kind of see it, you know, when those tragic things happen to people who suffer from depression, but you know, it's obviously too late for them when it gets to that stage. And there was a story just yesterday in the media about doctors in Australia suffering from depression and not getting help for it either. Even, you know, medical professionals who you would think know enough about the chemical causes and the nature of depression to do something about it, even they apparently suffer from the stigma of not wanting their colleagues or their patients to know that they suffer from this and consequently tend to do nothing about it and apparently have very high, rates of depression in the profession. Do either of you know what the rates of depression are? I know there was a little bit of talk about mental health funding in the recent election. Either of you have on hand the stats for people suffering from depression in Australia?
Well, I think it varies who you talk to. I mean, sometimes it's as low as sort of 15%, but it's we've heard sort of stuff as high as, you know, one in three people will suffer from depression in their lifetime. But I think regardless of what the exact number, and the reason that it's fairly unknown is because it's still quite hidden. A lot of people will suffer it and will not know that's what they're suffering, and they won't actually get it diagnosed. But I think the bottom line is that regardless of what the exact number is, I think every one of us will have an experience with someone who's either a close, close in the family, close friend, or a work colleague, that or themselves that is suffering from depression and will have to deal with that at one point in their life. So it is a real problem, and it's something that we're all going to sort of get exposed to if we haven't already been exposed to it one way or another in our lifetime.
And we've seen in the press also just recently things like Matthew Newton and the problems that he's having at the moment. Obviously, the guy's got some serious issues. Whereas when people have these serious issues and they come out in, you know, terrible ways, either suicide or violence or drug addiction or whatever it is, we tend to not focus on the root cause of, you know, what led them into this place in the first instance. You know, we tend to look at the results of it and talk a lot less about, well, you know, they're suffering from depression and their friends and family need to gather around them at these times, not ostracize them.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's one of the things that people don't see is that, you know, they talk about the drug addiction, alcoholism, etc., but they're the effects. You know, alcoholism isn't the cause of something; it's the effect of something else. And many a time, it's the cause of it is some form of depression that's bringing that on.
And as we understand more and more about it, obviously, I don't claim to be a doctor, but I remember when I started this podcast back in late 2004, in the very first episodes, I was talking about the fact that I was working with a psychiatrist at the time and dealing with some of the issues that I had in my career and my personal life. And people were sort of shocked at the time that I was talking about it publicly. I had a number of people say to me, you shouldn't talk about that sort of stuff, man. People will, you know, your future employers might hear this, or your current employer. I didn't have a job at the time, actually. But people were very shocked that I was talking about it. I was like, well, you know, it's chemical. It's nothing to be ashamed about. Sometimes our brains are chemicals, and, you know, when you get the chemicals out of whack for, you know, for a variety of reasons, out of go, it affects your moods. It affects your way that you think. It's not like there's something permanently wrong with you necessarily. It's just that, you know, shit's going wrong inside of your brain, and it's no different to having a stomach ache or a digestive problem. It's just something that you need to deal with a medical professional to get sorted out. We shouldn't have any of this social hysteria around it. So I think it's great that you guys are working to get the word out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I know, look, talking to my dad about it, and my dad's, you know, in his early 70s now, but, you know, he still sees a stigma attached to it because that's how he's brought up with it. You know, he immediately identifies with, when you talk about depression, it means that you're talking about someone that's, you know, that's insane. They're going to be committed, and, you know, it's taboo to be talking about these things, and you don't refer to people with those kind of illnesses because it's, you know, you're ostracizing them from society just by saying that. So, you know, he sort of doesn't even quite get, you know, why we want to do this. And it's like, it is to change that kind of thinking. You know, it is to change it from being, hey, it's something that you get committed for, to something that is a real illness that you can get help for and you can have it resolved.
Yeah, and just on that point, because my dad's at a similar age here, Cameron, as well, that when we can't even get him out of the couch, off the couch, to go to the doctor when he's actually sick. He'll prefer to lay on the couch or lay in bed and, you know, tough it out. Oh, I'll get over it. I'll get through it. So even trying to share with him why I'm doing this, it's lost on him. And one of the things that I think we've got to really try and overcome here is the fact that we are, you know, if you look at it from a workforce perspective, there's so much talk about the Generation Y and the millennials and the digital natives and such. But when you look about it from a societal perspective, our parents are now starting to, you know, move off into their twilight years, or I know they're probably not going to like me saying that, but, you know, for some of them it's probably going to be like that, and they just want to keep living the way they've been living for a number of years. Change is hard for them, and talking about this sort of stuff with those people is difficult, and that's probably why they don't do it. But one of the things that we've got to try and do, and really going back to your Matthew Newton comment a little bit earlier on, I think it's great that both Matthew Newton and even to a lesser extent the Ben Cousins of the world are coming out and talking about those sorts of things, because it does get people talking. And when people get talking, whether they like it or not, hopefully that conversation will continue. And if the conversation continues, it becomes easier to talk about. Just like the proverbial, you know, rock that rolls down and gathers more moss, or the snowball coming down the hill that gets bigger and bigger and bigger. Eventually, you just can't stop it. And that's what we're trying to achieve. And if you have a look at the premise behind the Black Dog Ride, started by Steve, he actually rode solo around Australia last year, raising funds for the Black Dog Institute, and specifically to raise funds for depression. And he said this year, one person is not enough. One person riding a motorcycle or riding a push bike or a unicycle or hopping from here to Perth is not going to be enough. I need numbers. I need masses. And that's where he said his snowball proverbially is. All of us now are converging on the Glen Helen Resort in Northern Territory to raise the awareness, to get that bigger presence, to start the conversations, to keep the conversations happening all along our journey in every place that we stop.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'm really impressed. You know, there was something that I read on the website that you guys have put together, which I'll give a plug for at the moment. It's ridingforacause.org, riding number four, acause.org. There was a blog post I think you wrote, Rob, where you were talking about the fact that obviously depression affects men and women, but particularly with men, and you guys referring to it with this, particularly the older generation, there's this whole attitude of, you know, you just need to toughen the fuck up and, you know, stop being a sissy. You know, these guys that were brought up in this generation where a man was a man and he didn't cry or complain about his problems and that kind of thing, which doesn't help. And, you know, I think one of the struggles is particularly for people that are the friends and family and the carers of people suffering from depression. We need to do a lot more work helping them to know how to deal with somebody in your life. As you were saying, Andrew, like when your dad's suffering from it, you can't even get him to do anything. I've had people in my life that are same. Like when they're seriously depressed and suicidal, and you can try and get them to call a helpline or call a doctor, and when they're in that dark place, they won't even do that. It's very, very difficult to even help them. I guess we need to help them when they're having their good moments, if they have them. I remember seeing a TED talk a couple of years ago. I can't remember the guy's name. I was just Googling it, but I couldn't find it. Talking about, he believes one of the reasons we have record levels of depression and anxiety in the modern world, in the Western world, he believes a lot to do with the fact that our brains are just overloaded with all of these choices that we have to make on a daily basis. You know, you go back up until a couple of hundred years ago and life was pretty predictable for most people, and there wasn't a great amount of difference between the way you lived and your parents lived and your grandparents lived. You know, if you were a bloke, you went into the same profession that your father went into. Same thing if you're a girl. You lived in the same village that you were born in all of your life. You went to the same church. You had the same king. You know, there wasn't a great deal of change. Today we live in a world where there's a huge amount of decisions that have to be made on a daily basis. And he was saying that our brains just aren't geared up to cope with that. So they literally have a sort of chemical meltdown, which leads to all of these things. But again, it just points to the fact that it's nothing to be embarrassed about. It's quite common. And it's just something that you need to see the signs of. And I think it's difficult for the people suffering it often to see the signs in it themselves. It's up to their friends and family around them to be paying attention before they do something tragic like harm themselves, to see the signs and to be cognizant enough of what the symptoms are and what the avenues are for getting help that they can actually step in and provide that caring role.
I think it's interesting what you mentioned before, because it sort of ties in what you're talking about now, and you mentioned about it being a chemical imbalance, which is exactly what it is. And I think the one thing that gets mistaken or misconstrued when someone is talking about depression is that people can be unhappy. It's fine to be unhappy. It's fine to be sad. But that's not depression. That's not what we're talking about. You know, it's a very different thing. And I think, you know, sometimes people are, you know, see these signs of someone being in a depressed state. But, you know, depression as a disease is very different. You know, it's about the chemical imbalance. And, you know, sometimes it's not only about, you know, being this depressed state, but the extreme mood swings and anger, and because it's a chemical imbalance, it's, you know, compensating that chemical imbalance with drugs or alcohol. So, you know, you're absolutely right. There is a big part of it that is education, that people can understand what real depression is versus sadness, and how to see it or how to try and help. Not diagnose it, but at least try and identify some of the real symptoms and, you know, maybe help that person or, you know, help that person go on the right path to try and resolve those issues.
Yeah, and I know this is about men's depression, but I also, for the people listening, point out that, you know, I've had experience in my life with women who are suffering from depression and not really knowing why. And one of the causes that I've identified, well, that we've identified or they've identified a number of cases is birth control. You know, it's very, very common if you go out there and read the forums that women taking birth control can have a huge effect on their moods because you're obviously messing with the body's hormone production, and sometimes just little things like that they're introducing into their system can kick these things off. So it even has nothing to do with the, you know, the normal stresses of daily life. It can be things that we are introducing into our bodies and not even knowing about it. And in a lot of cases, they'll have been on birth control for a number of years and everything will be fine, and then their bodies change and all of a sudden it tips them over the edge, and they don't know, they can't, you know, understand what's changed and what to pin it down to. So there's a lot of different things like that if you're working with a professional, they can help you identify potential causes.
Yeah, and just further to not only the birth control but other drugs and substances that we use is also the food that we eat. If you wind the clock back, you know, 30, 40, 50 years when there were less pollutants in the air, less chemicals that we knew about and such. The foods were simpler back then. You know, there were more home-cooked foods and such, whereas now there's a lot more processing. With processing comes preservatives. With preservatives comes chemicals of descriptions. And I think that overall, just to go back to your previous comment about the overloaded brains, what we've got to be very careful of is what we put into our bodies is what our brains are going our bodies are actually going to be fueled by. Mm-hmm. And there's not enough research being done right now as to every single chemical and every single chemical combination in foods that we're putting into our bodies. And then, as you say, from the women with the birth control perspective, how that then links with the brain chemistry itself. So really, it's not just that. It's everything that we're doing to ourselves. It's possibly even the environment we live in. If you live in a, you know, a densely populated city such as, you know, Mumbai or Los Angeles or New York, where there's a lot of pollutants and such in the air, and you say, oh, that's the price you pay for living here, you have to wonder, what are all those chemicals together adding up to when it comes to your brain? But another couple of points, just to go back on what you said before, with regards to the male side of things, is that arguably today we still have quite a patriarchal society where there is still the stigma, and we'll call it a stigma as well, that the woman stays home to look after the kids and do that mothering and nurturing things, and the man goes out and is the breadwinner. One of the things that we don't often associate with depression and with all of the symptoms and problems that entails is that without the loss, without the income coming in from that man, whether it's due to suicide or something else that's happened, there's a whole family that does get impacted. So even though we're calling it out that it's male depression, what we're trying to say is, don't, you know, follow the bandwagon of toughen the fuck up because you have to, or get out of it, you sissy, you shouldn't be thinking like that, to the point where you're saying, do you know what, if I'm feeling trouble, talking about it, sharing it with the ones that you love, with your doctor, with people that you trust, will make things better. And as Robbie said, if you find that you're in that particular mood on a regular basis, or it's continuing for a long period of time, seek the help, because it may be, you know, verging on the proper form of clinical depression where you do need help from the drugs perspective. You do need to balance out those chemicals. So, you know, think about it. And I say this to everyone I meet when they ask why I'm doing it. And I just say, imagine your father or your husband or your brother or your son is not there because they commit suicide, or because they're so depressed that they can't function in society. Who's going to be impacted? It's not just them. We don't live in isolation, and especially in today's social media and, you know, phone connected society, everybody has an impact on somebody else in the world. And that's an important point to remember.
Yeah, I agree. And again, I stress that, you know, if you have a family member or a friend that you think might be suffering from depression, if you can see the signs that they just don't seem to be responding to life in a healthy kind of way, if they seem to be sad and miserable for extended periods without any real reason, it's kind of our responsibility as the people who care about them and love them to step up and not be scared, and to sit down and at least have a conversation with them about how they're feeling and, you know, what avenues they've explored to try and isolate it. You know, if you care about these people, you know, step up. That's kind of our role. And get online, do some research, understand what the symptoms are, some of the signals, understand some of the causes behind it, not to try and diagnose them, but so you can do what a good friend or a family member will do, and it's to try and, you know, look after them and you know, find a way to help them get help for themselves. We have to take it upon ourselves, I think, to be looking out for it. Because the thing about depression is, I mean, if you break a foot, you know that you need to go see a doctor. But when you're suffering from depression, the very nature of the disease is your brain's not working properly. So you can't even see straight. You can't think straight. You know, you're not going to self-diagnose often because your brain's not working properly. That's the incredibly frustrating thing about the disease. So it comes back to family and friends to be on the lookout, I guess, particularly when there's like 1 in 3, 1 in 4 people suffering from it. You can absolutely be guaranteed that somebody that you know is going through this, and you don't want them to have to go through it alone. Well, guys, let's give the site a plug again. Writing for a Cause, number 4 in there. And Black Dog Institute, you're doing this to raise awareness for. I don't know their URL, do you?
It's just
blackdoginstitute.org.au. I can Google faster than you, Andrew, obviously. And what's your website, Andrew, My Proactive Life?
Yeah, myproactivelife.com. And it's just my thoughts and musings on ways that I'm changing my life to become better father, better husband, better member of society.
Yeah, good stuff. I had a read of your site the other day. It's fantastic. And like you guys, I've got a couple of young sons, and, I think it's our responsibility as fathers to lead by example.
Precisely.
Yeah, I think it is very important.
Well, enjoy the ride, boys. It almost makes me want to go out and buy a motorcycle. I did see photos of Rob's Harley the other night, and it is insane. It looks like the Bat Cycle.
I get that a lot.
It is insane. It is the coolest looking. I mean, I'm not into motorbikes, but that is the coolest looking thing I've seen in a long time. So I wish I was going with you. Well, and I know you've got a camera crew coming with you. There's going to be a lot of social media stuff produced. I know you're already on Twitter and Facebook.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. Yep.
And if people go up to your website, Writing for a Cause, they'll see links to that. They can help promote it. Even if they're not going on the ride, they can do their bit by promoting it via Facebook and Twitter, go up to YouTube and watch the videos and sponsor it and help you guys out, yeah?
That's right. Well, you can sponsor us. That's not the primary reason we're doing it. We're not really doing it to raise money, but raising money for the Institute is always a good thing. It's more about raising the awareness. But we will be, we have got a camera crew coming with us, and we're hoping to be able to at some stage have a documentary. Well, Black Dog will have a documentary about the whole event. But we are going to be tweeting the whole event. We're going to be taking video footage ourselves and doing daily blogs and vlogs and sending up some photos so people can see us on our trek. So that'll be all happening from our site. We've got our own Twitter handle, of course, which is also Writing for a Cause. And as you mentioned, we are on Facebook as well. So it's going to be plastered everywhere the whole trip.
Good on you guys. You're an inspiration.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks, Cameron.
And Rob, make sure you have a few good Podomo cigars while you're on the ride.
I am taking a few with me on the ride, so I'm sure there'll be some nights staring at the stars, telling stories, smoking those guys.
Excellent. All right, we're out.
All right, mate. Thanks. Yeah.